we'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll enjoy High Adventure with the Mounties and Sergeant Preston of the Yukon. But first, on the lighter side, let's spend some time with Jack Benny. The Jack Benny program spans some 23 years with great success all along the way. Jack worried about his receding hairline. He took inordinate pride in his blue eyes, fretted about advancing age, and never admitted to being older than 39. In the 20s and early 30s, Benny was a vaudeville performer. By 1932, he was a top stage headliner when columnist Ed Sullivan asked him to appear on a CBS interview program. His own show, premiering on NBC Blue in 1932, became a solid hit. Mary Livingston came on board within the first 2 years when a script had called for a young female Benny fan crashing the program to read poetry on the air. After auditioning many actresses for the part, Benny gave it to his wife. It was one of his best decisions. In 1949, CBS scored the biggest coup in broadcasting, luring Benny away from NBC with a deal involving $2 million. Reruns of the program continued until 1958. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with the Jack Benny program and guest star Jane Wyman from February of 1944. Another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Bert and Marge, Amos and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
The Jack Benny Program. From Mitchell Field, headquarters of the 1st Air Force, the Lucky Strike program starring Jack Benny. With Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Larry Stevens, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, in every group, in every crowd, in every show, in every barracks, there's always one outstanding personality.
Yes, indeedy.
So, it is no surprise that our little group of thespians has one of its own. And here he is, Mr. Eager Beaver of 1945, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Hello again. This is Jack Benny talking. And Don, I must say I'm very pleased with that introduction you gave me.
Oh, are you, Jack?
Yes, sir. And I'm going to stay pleased until I find out what an eager beaver is. I remember once you called me a sad sack, and for 6 months I went around bragging about it. I even had it engraved on my card. Sad Sack Benny. You know, fine thing to call me.
Well, Jack, how did you find out what it meant?
Well, one day I tried to be sociable, so I walked up to a top sergeant and said, "Hiya, Sad Sack." And between sad and sack, I was flat in my back. Anyway, way down. We've been away from California about a month now. How are you enjoying the trip so far?
Ah, it's swell, Jack. Especially when we went ice skating last week in Central Park. You looked so funny the way you kept falling down all the time and I had to keep helping you up.
All right. So I fell down once or twice.
Once or twice? Why, I picked you up so many times I felt like your ground crew.
You should talk, Wilson. When you fell down, you looked like a B-29 landing with its wheels up. Then you broke through the ice, fell into the lake, and it was high tide, clear out to Sandy Hook. So don't tell me that. Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello, Jack. Hi, fellas.
Mary, I'm glad you got here early because these boys expect me to put on a good show for them. You know, I'm an eager beaver.
You're what?
An eager beaver. That's the way Don introduced me.
Jack, you know what that is.
No, what?
An eager beaver is a sad sack with a commission.
Oh, I didn't know that. Thanks, Don. I'll have some more of my cards engraved. Say, Mary, how do you like it here at Mitchell Field?
Oh, fine, Jack. Especially now in the wintertime with all the snow on the ground. It's wonderful, really wonderful.
Right, what's so wonderful about snow?
It slows a soldier down when he's chasing a girl.
Well, that's ridiculous, Mary. The snow also slows down the girl when she's running away from the soldier.
I know. That's what's so wonderful about it.
Oh, I get it. You wanted the soldier to catch it.
You're pretty sharp today, aren't you, quiz kid?
I'm sharp every day, sister.
Anyway, these soldiers here are all swell guys. I was out with one of them last night. We went to the wrestling matches.
Oh, at the Garden?
No, Roseland.
Oh, Roseland Dance Hall. I was up there the other night.
No kidding, Jack. Did you have fun?
Oh, how can I have fun? You pay the hostess for your dance. You lead her out on the floor. You put your arms around her. Then bum-tiddy-yum-tum-tum, the music's over.
Well, what do you expect for a dime? Schubert's Unfinished Symphony?
Mary, it isn't bad enough I get stuck with short dancing, but when they were closing the place for the night, I had one ticket left over.
Well, what'd you do about it?
What did I do about it? I wasn't going to get stuck for the ticket, so I called the manager over and complained to him.
Well, did he give you your dime back?
No, he just waltzed me around the floor twice and sent me home. Boy, did he need a shave. And the next... Oh, hello, Larry.
Hello, Mr. Benny.
Hiya, kid.
Well, Larry, you've been in New York for quite a while now. Are you still having fun?
Oh, yes, oh. Mr. Benny. I'm having a swell time. Thanks.
Thanks to Mr. Benny?
Yeah, what babes he knows.
Yes, sir.
Larry, you mean you and Mr. Benny go out on double dates?
Yeah, you know, the girl Mr. Benny goes out with has the cutest daughters.
You're darn right she's cute, and so is her mother. Anyway, kid, the boys here are waiting to hear you sing, so let's have it, huh?
Okay.
Hold it a minute, Larry. Come in.
Mr. Benny, my name is Elmer. I'm a soldier stationed here at Mitchell Field, and in my spare time I write gangs. You know, jokes. Are you in the market for any?
No, thanks. I've got a regular staff of writers.
Yeah, but Mr. Benny, you pay a lot of Army camps, and I can write your special GI jokes.
I know,
now,
but...
for instance, you ask me why W.C. Fields is like a Mitchell Field bus.
Look, soldier...
Go ahead, ask me.
Okay, why is W.C. Fields like the Mitchell Field bus?
Because he knows when he's loaded, but he can always handle one more.
Look, soldier, sit down, will you? I'm trying to do a show. I'll talk to you after the program.
Okay, but if you lay an egg, don't brood over it.
I won't. Go ahead, Larry, let's have your song. Egg, brood. Say, that isn't bad, you know? That isn't bad.
Evelina, won't you ever take a shine to that moon? aren't you bothered by the bobolinks too? Tell me how long you're gonna keep delaying a day. Don't you reckon it's wrong trifling with April this way? Evelina, won't you pay a little mind to me soon? Fruit is fine, but what's the use of smelling watermelon clinging to another fella's vine? Evelina, won't you roll up that vine and be mine? Reckon it's wrong trifling with April this way. Evelina, won't you pay a little mind to me soon? Wake up, the earth is fair, the fruit is fine, but what's the use of smelling watermelon clinging to another fella's vine? Evelina, won't you roll up that vine and be mine?
Sung by Larry Stevens. Gee, that was swell, kid. I'm sure all of these fellas up here at Mitchell Field must be... Oh, my goodness.
What's the matter, Jack?
Holy smoke. Here I am in New York. Oh, am I in trouble? Am I in a jam?
Jack, what's wrong?
What's wrong? When I left Los Angeles, I forgot to notify my draft board. Isn't that awful?
Jack, calm down. You don't have to worry.
But, Mary, you know how the draft board is. They want to be able to put their finger on every man that's physically fit.
If they put their finger on you, you'd fall down.
What are you talking about? I'm physically fit. I'm in 1A. Here it is on my draft card, see? 1A.
That's A1. You took it off a bottle of meat sauce.
I did not. When they draft me, I'm going to apply for the Air Corps.
The Air Corps? Oh, Jack, don't be ridiculous. You know you can't stand high altitude.
Mary, altitude never bothers me. What are you laughing at?
You went to the movie, saw 30 seconds over Tokyo, and your nose started to bleed.
The picture had nothing to do with it. I was sitting in the balcony. You know, that can happen to anybody.
All right, Jackson, all right, Jackson. Stand back and relax. I like the soldiers, but I love them wax. Yeah.
Hiya, kid. Yeah, you've made loud entrances before, but what in the world was that?
Well, I can't help it, Jackson. These wax have been sitting out there for an hour waiting for Dreamboat Harris to show up.
Wait a minute, Phil. What makes you think they've been waiting for you?
Well, they're women, ain't they?
Well, don't be so conceited.
Look, Jackson, wherever I went, they kept following me and asking for my autograph. I bet I was asked to sign 1,000 autographs today.
Really?
Yeah, and if things keep up like this, I'm going to learn how to write.
That I would like to see.
Oh, Phil, you must be kidding. Don't you know how to spell your name yet?
Well, I know how to spell my first name, but my second name throws me.
Throws you? What's so hard about spelling Harris?
It has two syllables in it.
Syllables? Phil, that's syllables. I mean sibible. Oh, darn it.
Jack, the word is sibibles.
Mary, you said what I said.
Now, wait a minute, kids. Wait a minute. You're all excited. That's why you can't say it. The correct pronunciation of the word is syllables.
Yeah, that's it. Are you sure, Dunsey?
Why, certainly.
Yeah, well, now that we've got that straightened out, let's get on with the show.
Hey, Benny, I got another great gag for you.
Sit down, Elmer, will you, please? Say, Jackson, who is this character? He's a soldier here, a gag writer.
A gag writer?
Yeah, that's me. Hey, get a load of this one.
Elmer, will you please?
Hey, did you hear about the general who refused to put a whack in a guardhouse because he just couldn't bring a deer? You get it, General Brigadier?
Elmer, will you please sit down?
Okay. You want your show to be like a training film, it's all right with me.
Well, don't worry about it, Elmer, and I'll talk to you just as soon. I'll get it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester.
Where are you, Rochester?
In your hotel room. I thought I'd better tell you there was a fellow here from Look Magazine. He said they're doing a story about you, and he asked me some questions.
What'd he ask you?
Well, first he wanted to know your age, so I gave him our old standard answer, 36.
Good. I hope you stuck to your answer.
Oh, I did, boss. No matter how many different ways he asked me, I still said 36.
That's right. What do you have to say to that?
He said when time marched on, you must have gone AWOL.
Because he thinks he's pretty smart. What else did he ask you, Rochester?
Then he got to that question that for years has been a burning issue in the public mind.
What's that?
Could you possibly be as cheap in person as you are on the radio?
Uh-huh.
When he hit me with that one, I had to think fast.
What did you tell him?
I told him you were such a lavish spender, you were known from coast to coast as Diamond Jim Benny.
Good.
In fact, I told him you threw your money away like it was made in Japan.
Attaboy, Rochester.
And I just about had him convinced when in walked the man.
What man?
The man you rent your other twin bed to.
Oh, my goodness, of all the times for him to come in.
It was bad, boss, bad. The first thing he did was start yelling about you overcharging him for his laundry.
Oh, the nerve of that guy.
He made such a noise, he woke up your riders. Then it really got noisy.
Why? What happened?
Well, one of them got up to turn on the light, turned on the shower instead, and almost drowned the other three.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Well, what happened to the man from Look Magazine?
He took one look and jumped out the window.
Out the window, Rochester. You tell him that my room was 33 stories up?
No, I just let him count them on the way down.
Well, I'll be darned. What else happened today, Rochester?
Nothing much, boss. It's been pretty dull.
Oh, well, I'll see you when I get home. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I was so anxious to get an interview from that magazine. Oh, well, play, Phil. Tambourine played by Phil Harrison of Orchestra. Very good, Phil. Now, kids, don't forget, after our program, we're all invited to the mess hall for a bite to eat.
Mess hall? Well, I'm sorry, Jackson. I can't be there.
You can?
No, there's a friend of Alice's in town, and she's here all alone, so Alice has asked me to take her out and kind of show her around.
Oh, one of those things. When a wife asks her husband to take a girl out, I can imagine what the girl looks like.
I'll bet 8 to 5 she looks better than Gladys Zabisco.
Mary, keep my girl out of this, will you?
But she's so bow-legged.
She is not bow-legged.
She is, too. She looks like a donut with one bite out of it.
I don't care what Gladys Zabisco looks like. It isn't going to help you out of your troubles, Bill.
What trouble?
Are you kidding? While you're being dragged all over town by some dame, we'll be in the mess hall enjoying that good old army food. Say, Phil, who is this girl you're stuck with?
Ann Sheridan.
Well, it serves you... What? Whom? I mean, who?
Yes, Jackson, while you're in the mess hall enjoying that good old army food, I'm going to be dragged all over town by Ann Sheridan. Ain't that just too?
All right, why didn't you tell me you were going out with Ann Sheridan? Maybe I'd want to join you.
But Jackson, the mess hall, that good old army food.
I'm not hungry now. After all, I like to go out, too. As a matter of fact, Mary can come along and we'll have a foursome.
Well, I don't know. I promised Ann Sheridan...
Well, I'm sure Ann won't mind if Mary and I come along. In fact, you and Mary will make a very nice couple.
Wait a minute.
Why, Mary, Phil, I'm surprised at you. You two act like you wouldn't go out with each other.
Well, it ain't that at all, Jackson.
Of course not. I don't mind going out with Phil.
And I don't mind going out with Mary.
Well, then we ought to have a lot of fun. I don't mind going out with Ann Sheridan.
Hey, I've been here so long, I wouldn't mind going out with Gladys Zabisco.
Oh, it's you, Elmer.
Yeah, where is Bowlegs?
She's not here. Now, sit down.
Look, Jackson, Ann Sheridan is expecting me to take her out, so when she gets here, you lay off.
Okay, Phil. You can take Ann Sheridan, and I'll take Mary. And, Phil, as long as we're each taking out a girl, I don't want to get stuck with the check, and I don't want you to get stuck with the check. So tonight, it's share and share alike.
Well, that's a good idea, Jackson.
Sure, when you split it four ways, nobody gets hurt. Since we're going out on a double date, let's synchronize our watches, huh, fellas, huh? Anyway, Phil, come in. Why, Annie. Ann Sheridan.
Hello, Jack.
Hello, baby.
Hello, Filthy. Jack, I'm sorry to bust in like this, but I've got a date with Phil.
I know. We'll all be together. You see, Mary and I are going with you.
Oh, Mary, hello.
Hello, Angie. You're looking swell.
Say, Annie, I never saw
you. Oh, you look good, too, Mary. And I love that dress you're wearing.
Oh, it's just a little thing I picked up at Saks Fifth Avenue.
Yes, it's over
on... Hey, Ann, I've been wanting to ask you, where in the world do you get your hair done? It always looks so nice.
Yeah, it always looks...
Isn't that funny, Mary? I was going to ask you the same thing, because I've always admired your hair.
Well, Mary,
you know,
always...
No, I usually get mine done at Pierre's.
Well, Pierre's, you know...
Well, I get mine done at Antoine's, and they have the most wonderful stylist.
Well, Antoine's...
Now, well, you know, Pierre's, they have a girl,
right? Now, wait a minute, wait. Let me get into this conversation.
All right, Jack, where do you get your hair done?
I don't know. Rochester takes it someplace. Now, Annie, I don't think it's nice for you to come here and have a whole big conversation with Mary while Phil and I stand here like dopes.
Yes, and my feelings are hurt.
Oh, I'm sorry, Phil. I didn't mean to do it.
Well, I can't help it. My feelings are hurt.
Oh, Filthy, you don't mean that, do you?
Yes, I do, and I feel terrible.
Oh, I'm sorry, Filthy. Come here, let me put my arms around you and give you a great big kiss.
Yeah. Hey! Hey! Break it up! Break it up! Now, cut that out!
How'd you like it, Annie?
Oh, hubba, hubba, hubba!
Fine goings on.
Jackson, what are you mad about?
Well, My feelings were hurt just as much as yours.
Jack.
I can't help it if my feelings are hurt.
Well, if it'll make you feel any better, I'll put my arms around you and give you a...
Mary, break. You keep out of it. After all, it was Anne who hurt my feelings, not you.
What'd you say, Jack?
I said I feel terrible. And I think you ought to do something about it.
All right, Jack. I'll send you a telegram of apology.
I don't want to be kissed by a boy on a bicycle. Anyway, you could treat me better than that, Anne. You know, after all, we made a picture together. Remember, George Washington slept here?
Oh, sure. You know, when I was on my overseas tour, that picture was playing in China.
In China? What town?
Chongqing.
Really? Well.
Jack, come back here. That was 3 months ago.
Oh.
Let him go, Anne. He wants to get there before the prices change.
I do not. I just got excited, that's all.
Say, Phil, if we're going places tonight, we'd better get started.
Okay, Annie.
You see, a girlfriend of mine is waiting outside, and we've got to find somebody for her.
Did I hear you right, Annie? A girlfriend of yours is waiting outside?
Yes.
Oh, and you're looking for someone to go out with her? Well, I'm your boy. Let's go. Mary, instead of going out with me, you can go out with one of the pilots here.
Thanks, Jack. I feel like I've just been taken off a KP.
Oh, Anne, while I'm getting my hat and coat, have your girlfriend come in, will you?
Okay, Jack. Oh, Madeline, will you step in here a minute? I want you to meet the man you're going out with tonight.
Wait a minute, Anne. Did you say her name was Madeline?
That's me, Madeline Nussbaum, if you please.
Why, you're Mrs. Nussbaum.
You were expecting maybe Jesse Jones.
No.
My, what a surprise to be meeting you, Mr. Benny.
A surprise?
Yes. I know I'm going on a blind date, but you are opening mine eyes.
But Mrs. Nussbaum, how do you happen to be with Anne Sheridan?
Oh, she's coming to my restaurant frequently for a small order of chopped chicken liver, Hollywood style.
A Hollywood style?
Yes, the liver is coming from a chicken wearing dark glasses.
Oh, well, I don't know about this date tonight.
Come on, Annie, let's go.
Okay, Phil.
Hurry up, Jackson.
Well, Phil, you and Annie run along. I don't think that
Come on. Take my name, Jeffy
Mrs.
boy.
Mrs. Nussbaum, I've got a date with Miss Livingston. Oh, Mary,
come
Mary.
Come on. Don't be an eagle beagle.
Mary, where are
come
you?
Come on, Jackie boy. We're late already.
Mrs. Nussbaum, stop pulling my arm. Oh, Mary.
Come on. We'll have fun.
Mary.
Give me land. Lots of land. Need the stylish guys above.
Mrs. Nussbaum.
Don't fencing me yet.
Please stop dragging me, Mrs. Nussbaum.
Please.
Ladies and gentlemen, every week, most radio programs carry some sort of a special message from the Office of War Information. The message tonight is an urgent plea for 10,000 registered nurses to join the Army Nurse Corps and serve in the Army hospitals in the United States. You civilian nurses can best practice your profession by joining the Army Nurse Corps. You'll be commissioned, well-paid, clothed, plus many other benefits. But the important thing is, our wounded men need care, and the Army is tragically in need of 10,000 nurses now. So write for information to the Surgeon General, U.S. Army, Washington 25, D.C. Well, fellas and girls, we had a swell day here at Mitchell Field, and thanks very much for inviting us. Good night, Joni.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
From February of 1944, it's been the Jack Benny Program with special guest star Jane Wyman. In a moment, we'll ride with the Mounties and experience adventures in the Yukon with Sergeant Preston as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Sergeant Preston of the Yukon was the third major bigger-than-life character to come out of George Trendle's Detroit Hero Mill. When Sergeant Preston came to ABC in 1947, the program was known as the Challenge of the Yukon. That title was gradually pushed to the background, and by 1953, the character had become the title. The series was so popular, known as Yukon King, because the dog figured so prominently in the plot lines. Yukon King was forever mauling crooks and bushwhackers, chewing guns out of hands, hauling down one villain while Preston polished off the other. That's how he got to be the swiftest and strongest lead dog in the Northwest. The sergeant himself upheld the finest traditions of the Mounties, always getting his man with the help of Yukon King. Paul Sutton was Sergeant Preston for most of the run. Fred Flowerday directed and Charles Livingston produced. The show was sustained on ABC until 1948. By 1950, Sergeant Preston went to Mutual, where it remained until it left the air in 1955. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with Sergeant Preston of the Yukon and Contention from November of 1950. Another classic show from the golden age of radio here on Yesteryear.
Now, as gunshots echo across the windswept, snow-covered reaches of the wild Northwest, Quaker puffed wheat and Quaker puffed rice, the breakfast cereal shot from guns, present the Challenge of the Yukon. It's Yukon King, swiftest and strongest lead dog of the Northwest, blazing the trail for Sergeant Preston of the Northwest Mounted Police in his relentless pursuit of lawbreakers.
And King, on you, Husky!
Gold, gold discovered in the Yukon. A stampede to the Klondike in the wild race for riches. Back to the days of the gold rush, bringing you the adventures of Sergeant Preston and his wonder dog, Yukon King, as they meet the Challenge of the Yukon. Van Topton smiled to himself as he and his wife, Betty, stood watching while their little daughter, Gloria, opened a large box containing a birthday present.
Oh, golly, I'm so excited. Is it a big doll? Or maybe a wagon?
Stop trying to guess. Open it.
All right. Oh, Mama. Mama, look. A real live puppy. Can I... may I lift him up, Daddy?
Well, sure, he's your pup. Go ahead.
Come on, puppy. Oh, isn't he cute? Look, Mama. He's all white with just one black ear. Oh, Daddy, he's wonderful. Honest.
Glad you like him, Glow. It's up to you to take care of him. Remember that.
Well, I have a feeling that Mother will have a bit of extra caring to do. Isn't that the puppy Mrs. Rector had in town, Van?
Mm-hmm. She was willing to sell him to me, so I grabbed at the chance, knowing how pleased Glow would be.
Ow, you naughty puppy. Let go of my sleeve. Stop that. I'm going to go in my room and play with you. Don't you bite, you naughty puppy.
Van, you know very well how the Rectors have complained about that puppy since they got him a month ago. Mrs. Rector tells me he chews anything and everything in the place.
Well, all pups do that. They have to be trained, that's all.
From what Mrs. Rector told me, I'm afraid it's going to take a lot of training, Van. If he's as destructive as she says he is, we just won't be able to keep him.
Now, don't be unreasonable, honey. You saw how excited Glow was over that pup.
I've already made up my mind that if that puppy persists in chewing everything in sight, we'll get rid of him. And that's that.
Oh, heck, what's the use? I'm going back to town for a while. See you later.
During the next few days, Van Topton spent more time than usual in the cafe each evening, after finishing his work as clerk at the express office. One evening, Sergeant Preston entered with his dog, Yukon King, and approached Van's table.
Well, hello, Sergeant.
Hello, Warren. How are you?
Hello, Van.
Hi, Sergeant. Won't you sit down?
Oh, thanks. Lay down, King. Van, I've noticed you've been visiting this cafe for the past few evenings instead of going on home as you used to do. Anything wrong at home?
Oh, nothing too serious, Sergeant.
A few days ago, I took a puppy home to Gloria. Got it from the rectors.
Oh, yes, I remember the pup they had. I understand he practically chewed the foundation out from under their cabin.
That's the trouble. You know, Betty and I have rarely had a difference between us. But that pup sure caused one. I named him Contention because of the arguments he's caused at home in the past few days.
Well, that's quite a name for that pup. He still has the chewing habit, I suppose.
Oh, he sure has. Betty's given me one more week to get rid of him. But Gloria's crazy about the darn pup, and frankly, I sort of like him myself.
A bit of firm training ought to break him of that habit.
Sure, that's what I tell Betty. But you know how wives are. She claims Gloria and I have fun with Contention, while she has the work of trying to train him and break him of his bad habits.
Well, frankly, I don't know how wives are, Van, but I do know about dogs. If you and Gloria ignore his chewing habit, Betty's training won't have much effect.
I suppose you're right. Well, say, Sergeant, isn't that the gold whistle I've been hearing about?
Oh, yes. Want to look it over?
Say, that is something. Oh, it has your name on it, too.
That's right. Oh, it's made of gold. It's a replica of the official Mounted Police whistle.
The constable told me about it.
Well, Van, I have to move along. See you again soon. Give my regards to Betty and Gloria.
I'll do that, Sergeant. So long.
Good night, Van. Let's go, King.
Meantime, at a remote table at the back of the cafe, two men had watched Van and Sergeant Preston as they talked. After Preston and King went out, one of the men spoke.
Hey, Buck, I've seen that Mountie before up in Dawson City. What he's doing in Selkirk?
Maybe he's just passing through on patrol. They got a regular constable here, Sam.
Wish we could have heard what they was talking about. Funny that express fella's been hanging around town lately at night.
That can't mean anything. He has no way of knowing we figure on robbing the express office.
Yeah, but I still don't get it.
It's better this way. We'll know just where he is. The first night that snow falls, we'll pull the job.
Why do you want to wait till it's snowing, Buck?
Snow will cover our tracks so we can't be trailed.
Oh, I never thought of that.
That's why I have to do all the planning. You just don't think.
Oh, now, Buck.
Come on, let's get out of here. Go to the boarding house and I'll tell you all about my plan.
All right.
Late the next afternoon, snow began to fall. Sam and Buck waited in the cafe until they saw Van Topton enter after he had closed the express office. The two crooks sat for a while and then leisurely left the cafe.
Well, this is it, Sam. We'll get our dog team hitched and leave it behind the boarding house. Then we'll bust into the express office with the back way and clean out the safe.
Then what?
We can run along the back way to where we leave the dog sled. Express office and the boarding house are on the same side of the street.
Yeah, I know.
We'll head south and take the branch trail to Bibby Creek. I know a place there where we can hold up for a while. The falling snow will cover any tracks we leave, so we'll have nothing to worry about. Come on, let's get a move on.
A short time after the two crooks had left the cafe, Van got up from his table and started for the door.
Leaving earlier than usual, aren't you, Van?
Oh, I'm coming back. I forgot some papers I want to take home and work on tonight, so I have to go back to the office.
Still having trouble with that puppy you got from the rectors?
Yeah, the darn little mutt chews up everything he can get. But I don't want to give him up if I can help him.
Well, from what I heard you telling the sergeant last night, you don't have much choice.
Well, Betty's being stubborn about it, I admit. But I'm hoping she'll get to like Contention and let him stay.
Contention? That's a mighty big name for a pup. Well, I hope things work out for you, Van. I'll see you later.
Yeah, I'll be back soon.
Inside the express office, Buck was working on the safe, while Sam stood guard near the front.
It won't take long to get this old safe open. It's open.
Hold it, Buck, and put out the candle. Somebody's coming.
Candle's out.
Come up on the porch.
It must be the express clerk. Get to the side of the door, quick. Hold it, you.
That got him.
Yeah, he didn't know what hit him. Help me carry him over behind the counter.
All right. Put him down here. Yeah.
I got his keys. Now we'll get the stuff in the safe, and then we'll go out and lock him in. Nobody can fail us in this snowstorm. Let's get going.
After knocking out Van, the two crooks cleaned out the safe. And then locking the front door as they went out, they walked to the back and started away with their dog team. They headed down the south trail for a couple of miles before Sam called a halt.
Hey, Buck, stop a minute.
Follow you, Huskies, follow.
What's the matter, Sam?
We forgot to bring any supplies. We can't take a chance of being without food if we have to hole up because of the storm.
Doggone it, why didn't you think of that sooner? We can't go back to town now.
Maybe not, but we'll be in a fix if we don't get supplies someplace.
We'll stop at the first cabin we come to and make them give us some supplies.
If we do that, they'll get word to the constable in town that we're headed this way.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we can offer to buy supplies then and pay for what we get. That ought to keep them from being suspicious.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Let's get going. I'm getting cold.
All right.
March to, Huskies! Yes!
A few minutes later, Betty Topton answered a knock at the door.
Evening, ma'am.
Come in out of the snow.
Well, thank you. We want to buy some supplies from you. All you can let us have.
Yeah, we need plenty. I have some cash here in my wallet. I'll get... Drop my bandana. Hey, let go of that. Let go!
Mister, don't kick my puppy. He's just playing.
He ran off with my bandana.
Forget it. We haven't all day. We want supplies.
Well, I'm sorry, but I have very little here. You aren't far from town, though. You can get all you want there.
Lady, we're not going to town.
No, we just came
from... Shut up, Sam.
The puppy went under the bed in the other room, and I can't get him to come out.
Forget the pup. Who's in the other room?
Nobody. Daddy's in town. He works at the express office.
Oh, he does, huh? Well, that's good. Lady, this gun says you'll give us what supplies you have right now. Get busy and pack them up. We gotta get out of here.
We'll continue our adventure in just a moment. This is the last week. Yes, this week is your last chance on this program to hear how to get a 14-karat gold-plated copy of Sergeant Preston's famous mounted police whistle. So hurry. You get with this terrific whistle a 12-inch gold-colored braided nylon cord to hang from your buttonhole or belt. It's a beauty of a whistle, plated with gleaming 14-karat gold. It's a heavy whistle. You can feel the weight and quality of the heavy-duty metal. It's a big whistle, actually over 3.5 inches long. And listen to its two-tone sound that shows it's an official police whistle. Think of the signaling you can do with this Sergeant Preston whistle. Perfect for dark night. Handy in any emergency. Just what you need for training and calling your dog. Don't forget, this police whistle is not for sale in any store. To get it, send the box top with only 35 cents. That's 35 cents and your name and address to Yukon, Chicago 77, Illinois. You'll get a money-back guarantee with your swell 14-karat gold-plated Sergeant Preston mounted police whistle. Yes, hold it in your hand. Blow it just once. And if it isn't better, far better, than any other whistle you've ever seen, you may return it and get every cent of your money back, plus postage. So hurry, hurry, hurry. This is the last week of this radio offer. Send 35 cents and a box top to Yukon, Chicago 77, Illinois. Now to continue. Learning that Betty and her little girl were alone in the cabin, Buck pulled a gun and ordered Betty to pack up what supplies she had available. For a moment, Betty was startled. Then she spoke spiritedly.
I won't give you any of our supplies.
Sam, while I keep her covered, see what supplies you can find.
All right.
Just a minute. You keep away from that cupboard.
Shut up and sit down with her.
Oh, how dare you push me like that?
Keep quiet and maybe you won't get hurt.
Mama, I'm scared.
Come here, Gloria. Sit on Mama's lap.
I found the
gun. Don't let them hurt us.
Be quiet, dear. Everything will be all right.
You think I won't use this gun, you're mistaken. So you better get wise and both of you keep quiet. Come on, hurry up, Sam.
I'm putting the stuff in this sack here. There. I got about all of it. Look, Buck, what are we going to do about the woman? You want me to tie her up and
just... Don't bother. She's alone and 2 miles from town. She has no way of getting there except on foot, and she couldn't do that in a storm. By morning, we'll be plenty far from here and without leaving any trail behind us. Come on, let's go.
About an hour after the robbery, Sergeant Preston entered the cafe and looked around for Van Topton.
Oh, hello, Jake. Topton around?
Nope, he was here about an hour or so ago. Said he was going back to the office for a few minutes to pick up some papers, and he was coming back. Funny it's taking him so long.
Well, maybe he decided to do some work at the office. I'll go over there and see if he's working.
Well, his dog team's still out back. So I know he didn't go home.
Oh, I see. Well, thanks for the information, Jake. I'll go to the express office. Come along, King. A few minutes later, Sergeant Preston and King approached the front of the express office. Oh, it's strange. There isn't any light in the office, King. I'll try the door. It's locked. Wonder where Van is. He didn't go home. His dog team's still behind the cafe. What's the matter, King? Van! Van, are you in there? Only one thing to do, fella. I'll light the lamp. What's happened, Van?
My head. Can't stand. Too dizzy. Someone jumped me in the dark.
Oh, a nasty blow on the back of your head.
That's safe. See if it's...
I'll find out. Safe's open and empty. I'll bandage your head, Van, and then I'll get the constable. We'll take you home on your own sled, and then we'll try to get a line on these crooks.
Sometime later, with Preston using his own dog team and the constable driving Van's, they arrived at Van's cabin.
Van, I'm so glad you're home. And I'm more than glad to see the sergeant and the constable with you.
Something wrong, Betty?
Yes, Sergeant. I'll tell you what happened.
Briefly, Betty told about the two men who had taken supplies. When she finished, Preston spoke.
Constable, they could have been the ones who robbed the express office.
Robbed the express office? Van, that bandage. I didn't notice it with your parka hood on.
I'm all right now, honey.
Do they have any idea that you're Van's wife, Betty?
Yes. Gloria told them her daddy worked at the express office. They laughed and said they wouldn't have to tie me, that I couldn't get to town in a storm on foot, and that by morning they'd be far away in a hideout.
Then they must have been the ones who robbed the safe. Huh? Puppy must be under the couch. King's looking under there.
He is. He's been chewing on something he found on the floor.
I want to see that, Pup. Hey, Pup. Come on, fella.
I'll pull him out.
Well, what's that you have there? Oh, a bandana.
Well, that's the one Contention took from one of the crooks.
Fine. Drop it, fella.
But why do you want that, Sergeant?
Buddy, your pup's found something that may lead us to those crooks. King can get the scent from this and should be able to pick up their trail in spite of the falling snow. Let's go, Constable. There's no time to lose. Come on, King.
Once outside Van's cabin, the great dog was able to pick up the scent through the light, fluffy snow on the trail. And with King leading the way, Preston and the constable followed with the dog team along the trail left by the two crooks.
On, King! On, you husky!
This branch trail leads to Beaver Creek, Sergeant.
I know. We're almost there. But they may have pushed on toward Whitehorse.
They'll stop sometime to eat and rest.
That's right. That's what I'm counting on. Storm stops, so the going's much easier.
I think I see a glimmer of light ahead.
Must be a cabin. We'll stop here. Well, King! Oh, you husky! Hold on. Wait here, constable. I'll go with King and see if the trail leads to that cabin. They might hear the dogs if we go on with the team.
That's right. What if they are in that cabin?
I'll try to get the drop on them. If I run into trouble, I'll blow two blasts on my whistle. In that case, lie flat on the sled and start the team toward the cabin.
All right, Sergeant.
If one of them happens to be watching, he won't see you until you're close enough to help.
I'll wait for your signal and lie flat on the sled.
Good. Let's go, King. Find them, fella.
Inside the cabin, the two crooks pushed their chairs back from the table and stood up. Buck yawned and spoke.
We might as well grab a couple hours' sleep on the bunks over there, Sam. I'll blow out the lamp.
If the snow stopped, we could leave here when we wake up and head for Whitehorse.
Yeah, I'll look out the window and see. It has stopped snowing, Sam. That means we... Hey... I see a man outlined against the snow. He's heading this way.
Let me see. Where?
There he is. See?
Yeah. He can't see us here in the window with the light out. What are we going to do, Buck?
Whoever he is, we'll let him in. We'll get behind the door when he enters. Grab your gun and come on.
Yeah.
Outside, Sergeant Preston and King moved cautiously toward the darkened cabin. King moved to the door, sniffing. And then, looking at Preston, the dog whined.
Quiet, King.
Just inside the door, Buck and Sam had heard the dog. Buck spoke hurriedly in a whisper.
Dog. Must be Preston, that mutt. Quick, get up on the rafters. Stand on a chair.
All right.
He bust in a minute.
All right, now wait a minute.
That mutt can't reach us.
The two men straddled the rafters above and waited tensely. A minute went by, and then the door was eased open, and Preston and King entered.
Doesn't seem to be...
Please, Brownie, and drop your gun.
That mutt can't reach us up here.
Drop your gun, I said.
All right.
Now, put the dog outside.
For a moment, Sergeant Preston stood outlined in the glow of the fireplace. And then he spoke to King.
All right, King. Outside, boy.
Go on down, Sam. Close the door while I keep him covered.
All right. Now I got him covered, Buck.
Good. I'll come down.
Hey, what do we do about that dog?
We shoot him before we leave. Right now, we don't want any shots to attract attention. We got to figure what to do with this money right away, Sam. I'll light the lamp again.
I got an idea so we won't be trailed for murder. We'll tie the mount and put him on the sled. And along the trail, we'll knock him out, untie him, and dump him in a ravine. He'll freeze to death, and no one will know what happened.
It's a good idea, but one of us has to ride the sled. Him along, there won't be room.
I figure he must have brought along a sled and team, Buck. He couldn't catch up with us if he hadn't.
Yeah, that's right. What about it, Monty? You know you must have followed with a dog sled. Where is it?
I left my sled and dog team up the trail. Came the rest of the way on foot, hoping to take you by surprise.
Yeah, we outsmarted you this time.
I reckon he must have come alone, Buck.
Well, we'll use his dog sled along with us. One of us will have to go after it before we can take Preston out.
But we got to kill that big mutt waiting outside first. We'll just have to take a chance that nobody will be around to hear the
shot.
Hold
on a minute. Hold on. Tie me up and leave me here instead of taking me with you.
Nothing doing.
Well, then, if you let me call the dog in, I'll promise you he won't attack. You can keep me covered while I tie him. If you do that, I'll blow two blasts on this whistle of mine, and my dog team will come here of their own accord.
Well, what about it, Buck?
Yeah, we don't have to agree, but take that whistle from him, Sam, and open the back window a bit, and you blow two blasts on it. Maybe the team will come.
All right.
Go ahead, blow the whistle.
Hey, seems like the team really answered that whistle.
The team is coming, like he said. They'll stop when they see the other dog outside, I guess. Get some cord and tie Preston good and tight, Sam.
Keep him covered. I'll tie him, all right.
Meantime, when he heard the two blasts made by Preston's gold whistle, the constable laid flat on the sled and then urged the team on.
On, you huskies!
When they approached the cabin, King ran toward the team, which stopped out front. The constable could see a figure at the window, so he lay quietly out of sight on the sled. The figure at the window turned away, so the constable quickly got up and moved to the side of the cabin. He peered inside, taking in the situation. Then he moved around to the door. Patting King on the head, he spoke in a low tone.
Quiet, fella. Go inside. You ready to get him, King?
Inside, Sam had tied Preston while Buck stood near holding a gun. And then Buck went to the window and watched as the dog team pulled to a stop out front. He could see only the dim outline of the sled, but he was satisfied that no one had driven the team to the cabin. He turned away, saying,
Sure a smart dog team. I was watching out the window to make sure nobody was driving the dog team here. And now we load up and get ready to finish off that mud out there and...
Drop that gun!
Hey, what the... Well, get you...
Sam, who had just finished tying Preston's hands behind his back, grabbed for his gun, using Preston as a shield.
I'll get that money, Buck. You don't dare shoot at me.
Even as Sam spoke, the great dog King moved like a gray streak along the wall until he was behind Sam, and then he sprang as Sam aimed at the constable.
Get him off! Help! I have his gun!
King, down, fella. Watch him, boy.
I've got the cords.
Thanks. All right, let's have that whistle.
Here it is.
When you blew that whistle, it brought the constable along with the team.
Well, you told me to blow it, so stop beefing. What's more, you must have been blind not to see him coming.
I could swear he wasn't with him. I still can't figure how he got here without me seeing him.
Think that over in jail. The gold's on the table, constable. We'll stop at Van's cabin on the way back. Let's get going.
Later, at the Topton cabin, the two crooks were identified by Betty as the men who had stolen supplies. With a twinkle in his eye, Preston looked at Van Topton and then spoke to Betty.
Betty, you're fortunate to have that puppy Contention here. If he hadn't taken the bandana from one of those crooks and run off with it, we might not have been able to pick up their trail.
Contention's bad habit of grabbing and chewing things has put him in bad around here, Sergeant. I've decided to give him up to please Betty. I'll get Glow another pup.
Van Topton. How can you stand there and say such a thing about poor little Contention after he practically got back your stolen gold for you? Sometimes I think you men don't have any feelings at all.
But, Betty, I...
Here, Contention.
Give me a boy. Come on, puppy. That's a good boy. You're staying right here with us as long as you live, Contention. And Gloria's daddy will just have to make up his mind to that.
That's all right with me, Betty. If you say so, Contention stays.
Even King agrees. Well, I'm glad Contention earned himself such a fine home. Let's get these crooks to town, Constable. This case is closed.
This is J. Michael wishing you goodbye, good luck, and so long.
From November of 1950, it's been Sergeant Preston of the Yukon with Contention. Well, that's all the time we have for today, but join us again next week at this time and invite a friend to listen. Together, enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio. Remember radio, we'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you, sodio, volio, dodio, do.
Preceding program copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved.